This is a paid commercial program and may not represent the views of Bonneville International Corporation or Federal News Radio. Statements and opinions from this broadcast are solely those of the individual contributors or advertisers as indicated. Federal News Radio does not take responsibility for those statements or opinions and accepts no responsibility or liability for any inaccuracy, errors, or omissions reported during this program.
Welcome to For Your Benefit, presented by NITP, the federal leader in retirement planning seminars. Join NITP this morning for an hour of plain talk on planning your future. You've got questions, they've got answers.
Good morning and welcome to For Your Benefit. We're here this morning to talk about federal health care plans. Imagine that with open season soon to come. And with us to guide us along is... Walt, I'm just awful at these introductions. Editor of the Guide to Healthcare Plans for Federal Employees and, what is it, the Washington Consumer's Checkbook. And how long have you been doing this?
I think it's the 30s. I could read off the cover. it doesn't say. It's the 32nd year.
I was going to say, it's got to be at least 30 years because I've been reading it that long.
A third of a century of healthcare advice, and which nobody pays any attention to.
Oh, please. Yes, and Walt has forgotten more than most people know about this stuff. So we're very fortunate to have Walt kick off the, as you do each year. And I think you come midway through and sometimes at the end as well to correct everybody, right?
Right.
Anyway, good morning. And Tammy Flanagan, Senior Benefit NITP, GovExec columnist, again, forgot more about federal benefits than most people know. Good morning, Tammy.
Good morning, Bob.
It's been a few weeks, hasn't it?
Couple of weeks.
And Joe, you're going to have to introduce yourself.
Joe Bradley, just retired from the federal government, 36 years, retirement benefits, and all those excellent things. So
I think Joe's pretty neck and neck on what we know about benefits, because he's probably been doing it longer than I have, so we're happy to have him here with us.
We don't have to go there.
Okay, and I'm Bob Lyons, and I don't know anything about what the other three know. I'm a tax finance type with NITP, and hopefully I can add some comments with reference to that. We're here, and take advantage of this brain trust, 202-465-3080, 202-465-3080. The first bullet point on our website is, and I'm sure everybody said, what's driving up healthcare premiums? What do you think, Walt?
Oh, it's the same, always. Healthcare gets more expensive every year in this country because doctors and hospitals charge more, medical device manufacturers charge more, and we use more of it. And so it's sort of, and medicine has gotten a lot better in recent decades. Lots of people live today who would have died had they had a heart attack 20 years ago. They'll survive today, but that kind of care costs more. So the medical sort of inflation rate for medical care is always a couple of percentage points a year higher than for everything else. So even though in this country in the last 2 years, overall prices have been absolutely flat, medical care prices rise a little bit every year. Federal workforce seems to get a little more aged every year. The premium increase this year was on average about 7%. That's not bad, but it's not zero either.
And I think the folks listening, they hear 7%, but it's 7% of some fraction. In other words, it's not 7% on the whole premium because they don't pay the whole premium. Now, it is 7% on their piece, but it's not 7% of X. It's 7%
of... Well, but it's both numbers are about 7%. Even though the government pays roughly three-fourths of it, depending on which pay plan you're in and so on.
But there's another factor to the rising cost. It's not just the premium you pay. What I always look at is to see what are my out-of-pocket expenses doing. So have they gone up as well? Are there higher deductibles,
actually,
higher co-insurance?
This year, I think sort of the interesting news this year is that, and I've been through every brochure of every health care plan in the system, benefit cuts are few and far between, okay? There are not, like Blue Cross, standard option this year. No, nothing rolled. They've been raising their deductible a bit and this, that, and the other. Flat, okay? A lot of benefit improvements that are consistent, mostly due to OPM initiatives and health reform. The famous one is your kid up to age 26 is now going to be covered starting January 1st, but there's some other improvements. So this is a year, there's always a few plans that have had to trim a little here and there, but by and large, plan benefits are better, not worse. So the 7%, and part of that 7% increase is for added benefits, because at least a percentage point of it is for those up to age 26 adult children. It's hard to call them kids.
Yeah.
And
adult children.
Another probably, not a whole percent, but some fraction of a percent is due to improved preventive care benefits in the FEHBP.
Was that due to health care reform? Did it require no deductible on preventative care?
Yes and no. Mm-hmm. The way it's complicated and technical, but in a nutshell, plans that are, quote, not grandfathered have to provide preventive benefits with no deductible and no copayment. Most FEHBP plans are grandfathered and will be for several years to come. You get to be grandfathered if you don't change your benefits much. Mm-hmm. But the OPM decided, I think, and I think the plans agreed, why fiddle around for a few years? Why have some plans for improved preventive this year and some more next, and it takes 5 years before all of them are on the same page? So they just went ahead and took the plunge, and in the call letter last spring said to the plans, no deductibles, no copayments for preventive health care, and that's and some improvements in the scope of coverage. All the plans now cover all the vaccines that are recommended by the Centers for Disease Control for preventive purposes. And for, you know, an example of a vaccine that most plans didn't cover 3 or 4 years ago was the vaccine that prevents shingles, herpes zoster. And if you're an adult and you catch that disease, it's terrible. There is a vaccine against it. It's expensive. It's a couple hundred bucks to get the shot. And I had friends complain to me, you know, Blue Cross doesn't cover that shot. Why don't they cover that shot? Well, Blue Cross has covered it for a while now, and all the other plans now cover it. And so there's a much stronger and more robust, and you pay zero.
So we're not just talking about vaccines for children. It can be also adult vaccines.
Oh, absolutely.
Yeah, that's great.
Other than the mandated issues, are there all the plans kind of adding benefits and one follows the leader, if you will? Or are there any ones that just dig in their heels and say, no, I'm not going to do it? No, we don't have to single them out.
No, that's okay.
Looking out over the landscape.
I think they're always making minor adjustments. The thing to understand is that almost all of them are so good now. Benefits over decades have improved. There's only so far you can improve them, okay? When everybody covers hospice, then there's sort of no bandwagon to jump on. Mm-hmm. It's that kind of thing. So what I think we saw this year, a few plans trimmed benefits a little bit to keep their premiums down, okay? Some of the high-deductible plans did that because they become so popular, and they've attracted so many older and sicker people, okay? So they had to make a few adjustments. But really, it's been very idiosyncratic, okay? A tweak here, a tweak there.
Have you noticed that the high deductible plans have been gaining enrollees? Because I know the enrollment for those are very low, and when I bring it up at the seminars, a lot of employees don't even know what a high deductible plan is.
They have been growing in percentage terms hugely. 2 years ago, there were about 35,000 people enrolled in the high deductible and consumer-driven plans. Now, as of last spring, it was up to over 70,000. About 75,000. And the patterns are interesting. One of them dropped out this year. United Healthcare dropped out of, it still has some HMOs around, but the high deductible and consumer driven United plans are gone. Aetna, and I think you may be having Aetna on your show.
We often do. Yes, we do. Yes, we will.
They are the market leader. They've got over half the total enrollment in consumer driven and high deductible plans, and there's a reason for that. It's a very good pair of plans they offer.
And they're so broad, they're, you know, recognized
around
the country.
Yeah, and they're virtually a national plan. I mean, they cover, you know,
almost every area
in the country. So they've gained, but GEHA and mail handlers and some of the others have, you know, they have respectable amount numbers of enrollees. Now, we're up to 75,000 or so enrollees in these plans. The one way to think of it is that sounds like a lot of people, but the other way to think about it is that it's only...
Out of 14 million.
out of 8 million. Well, the 75,000 is against the 3 million, you know, contracts, not without counting all the dependents.
Yeah.
But it's still only a 2%. And a hair.
Okay. You know? Help me, the two of you. What's a high deductible plan? It scares me just hearing it.
Well, by nature, it's a high deductible, but it allows you to open a health care savings account, which is what's really attractive about it, I think.
Yeah. The key thing these plans do is they all give you, there's some variations, and there's two basic types. Consumer driven aren't quite the same as high deductible, but the basic idea is you get a savings account to start the year. You've got, depends on the plan, depends on whether you're self-only or family, but it may be $2,000 or $3,000 in the bank. okay, in an account in a high deductible plan with your name on it. And if you do nothing but have your annual physical, which is free, okay, you'll wind up the year with that same couple $1,000s.
And paying almost nothing in the net for health insurance, because that amount that goes into that savings plan, I look at that as kind of a rebate of your premium.
That's right. In fact, I noticed, I've said this in the book a couple of years running, and I saw it in one of Tammy's columns recently.
I picked that up from
it's
you.
It's basically free health insurance if you're not sick. That is, the premium you pay, particularly because there's a tax preference for the premium, is often less than the amount you get in the savings account. Now, if you're sick, there is where the high deductible comes in. And you may pay, after you use up your savings account, you may pay the next $1,000 or $2,000 out of pocket. You pay it all. Mm-hmm. And you're going to get a network rate. You know, hopefully you're going to use the plan's preferred providers, but you're going to pay it all.
But you can make contributions if you have a healthcare savings account. If you're eligible for that, I should say, then you can make tax-free contributions, whether you're working, and even a lot of retirees can do that if they don't have other health insurance.
Correct. Right. Yep. It's a feature that's sort of like having a flexible savings account, only it's not time limited. It doesn't expire.
It's kind of like an IRA for medical expenses.
Yeah, only it's even better. But anyway, once you've gone through the deductible, paying out of your pocket, then most of it, except for what you were able to contribute extra, then regular insurance kicks in. Okay. And the plan pays, 90% plus or minus of your costs. And then the catastrophic protection kicks in, okay? And in these plans, it's in the technically true high deductible plans, it's $5,000 for self only and $10,000 for a family. And that's without loopholes. I mean, those are real ironclad, legitimate, guaranteed. You will not be more than $5,000 out of pocket. And that's better than the guarantee in almost every one of the traditional health insurance plans.
Yeah, because some of the traditional ones will have exceptions for physical therapy doesn't count towards the catastrophic. But you're saying these count everything, all of your expenses.
They count everything.
Prescription, copays, and everything.
And let's suppose you go a couple of years in a row without having high expenses. Your savings account builds up, okay? And the money went in tax-free. It grows tax-free. You can invest it in stocks, bonds, whatever. And now you have a bad year. Maybe by now your balance is up to $5,000 or $10,000. Now you can spend that money, and the high deductible it comes into play, but you're paying it out of your account, out of your pocket.
So it's like a cash reserve for medical care.
Yeah, and if you keep it, people in their 50s have something called catch-up contributions they can make.
$1,000, right?
And if you're in the consumer-driven are not quite the same, but we're taking the pure high deductible, you can keep it the rest of your life. And it can grow. It's like an IRA on steroids. And when you take it out, it's tax preferred.
And later on in life, as you get older, you can use some of that money in your HSA for paying for long-term care. And I guess depending on your age, you can do a bigger percentage as you get older. So
absolutely.
If money's left when you're in your 70s, that's a good way to help fund your long-term care insurance.
And it's such a good deal. Some people in these plans, I mean, I know we're getting technical, don't, even when they could use their savings account to pay for health care, don't. They leave the money in so it'll grow.
Sure.
And I know in your book, Walt, you rank like the plans according to families of two or this group of people would be best suited. So who do you rank best suited for high deductible health plans?
I actually find them highest rated in every group we cover, okay? Wow. Including even, for example, retirees with Medicare. Now, if you have Medicare, you can't be in a pure high deductible plan. You can be only in a consumer-driven plan. In that case, the account is not personally in your name. And if you change plans, it goes back to the company. But it otherwise works pretty much the same way.
And you can't make contributions.
And you can't. Yeah, it doesn't have all the bells and whistles. Mm-hmm. But it basically works a similar way. There's an account. You can use it. It can grow over time. And we find that, for example, people with Medicare Parts A and B can save a lot of money in these plans because they get the savings account and they can use it to make up their dental expenses. It's things that the regular health plan doesn't
normally have to pay out of
cover,
pocket.
Okay? And they can rely on Medicare to be the primary payer for their, so that the high deductible doesn't even zap
kick
them.
In.
So we really find in every age group, in every family size, the one group who shouldn't probably be in these plans is the group who has high, predictable, steady expenses every year. If you're a diabetic and maybe have some other problem and you know you're going to spend year in and year out $5,000 on drugs and devices and other services, probably you don't belong on a high deductible plan because you'll be hitting the deductible every year. You'll never be able to build up the savings account high enough. So you're a better candidate for a plan with really good prescription drug coverage and first dollar coverage and, you know, like an HMO.
I get questions at the seminars because I talk about this and people do get interested when I'm talking about it. And then they're like, well, why doesn't Blue Cross offer this type of coverage? Do you have any insight as to why it's not offered by Blue Cross, since they're the kind of granddaddy?
They dabbled in it a little bit a few years back. They had a little temporary pilot program
in different parts of the country.
In a few parts of the country, none of which were, you know, they were like Timbuktu, Idaho kind of places. And it didn't catch on. I think people who enroll in Blue Cross tend to be very conservative in their choices. They tend to stay there for life, and it's hard to excite them about something else. But it wouldn't surprise me at all. That company has been quite innovative, actually. The Blue Cross Basic option, which is a superb option and really quite different than the other national plans because you only can use preferred providers, but you get a really good deal on premiums and coverage, both. It wouldn't surprise me to see Blue Cross venture again into this area with some kind of offering.
So, Walt, how does one get a copy of your book? Can they get it on the agent? I understand the agency's net sometimes has
that. Yeah, the best way by far, we have an online version and a print version. We think the online version is better. So you go to www.guidetohealthplans.org.
Imagine that.
One long word. .org. And at that point, you can either order an online version, which actually won't be available till about the first day of open season.
Which is a week from today.
Yeah, a week from today. So it'll be a couple more days before it's up. The older, the 2010 version is there, but the 2011 version won't be online for a couple of more days. And the, or you can order the print version. And
are they selling the print version in bookstores or CVS?
They will, but it's still at the printer. I mean, the problem is we have to go from we don't have the information on benefit changes and so on for all the plans until October. Yeah. So it's just we're in a very tight production schedule. But the book is I know we're not supposed to advertise, but it's around $10 and you can, as I say, I call it book, but really the online version is so fast and so user-friendly, I cannot recommend it too much, even if I'm one of its...
Well, aren't there some employees who their agency pays for it for them?
Oh, yeah. That's very important. Probably a third, roughly, of all federal departments and agencies subscribe for on behalf of all their employees. And they buy it for pennies from checkbook. And then everyone in the agency gets it for free. And you can use it in the office or you can use it at home. It doesn't matter. They'll typically be some kind of little password deal. And on our homepage, you can check to see who's, you know, is your agency one of those who's going to provide it for free? If they're not, there's nothing stopping you from raising a little hell within the agency or within your bureau within the agency because it's extremely, very inexpensive. And it's a great fringe benefit. You know, it's interesting. It's a typical person using this guide can save $1,000 or $2,000 a year in healthcare costs, both premium and out of pocket, by following our recommendations. When you save a couple of $1,000, the agency does too, because they're paying 3/4 of the premium.
Right,
exactly.
And we have found that on average, an agency saves $1,500 per employee who actually
makes a change.
Makes a change based on our advice.
Well, you're also endorsed by OPM because if you go to opm.gov/insure and click on health and then compare health plans, there's a link to your site on OPM's site.
Oh, yeah. And OPM subscribes for its own employees, too. But, you know, endorse may be too strong a word, but they know it's a valuable tool.
Well, if they put it up on their site, they must think highly of you. That doesn't go up there with no little bit of thought process.
Is there any way to compare plan A, B, C, and D next to each other?
Absolutely.
So if you go in there and here's my family or here's my individual profile.
Are you talking about Medicare A, B, C, and D, or are you just saying theoretically?
Plans X, Y, and Z.
Plan X, Y, and Z.
I just said that because I know a lot of people have questions about that.
The way we organize the website, and actually the printed version also, you go to you're taken to the web page that fits your circumstance, your family size, your age, your pay system, whatever. And we rate all the plans in this area, in most areas of the country, about 24 plans that you're eligible for. And then you can... From among those that you might say, for example, I really want to use an HMO, okay? Or maybe you don't want to use an HMO. We group them by whether they're an HMO, a traditional PPO plan, or one of these high deductible and consumer driven plans. But you pick whatever, a couple of them to compare, or maybe one from each group, and you then can go into special side-by-side, highly detailed comparison. So what we try to do is give you where are you likely to save the most money, and we estimate it in dollars, okay, plan A versus plan B.
This is your background, right? Well, you're an economist by training, so that's where you're going to get the money, dollars and cents savings. Mm-hmm. So I think it's a good resource for employees to take advantage of.
It's a financial investment to buy health insurance. Mm-hmm. You need to pay attention to what it costs you, and you need to pay attention to what it will benefit you if you get sick.
It's financial, but it's also emotional. Because a lot of people don't want to switch plans. They've been loyal to one plan for 30 years, so it's hard to get them to switch.
Yeah, the percentage of people that switch is not large, as I understand it, but it maybe should be larger.
I think it definitely should be larger.
Without question. It's been about 4 or 5% a year. Actually, the last couple of years has been a fairly substantial, it's interesting, a substantial migration out of Blue Cross Standard Option, mostly into Blue Cross Basic Option. The HMOs have lost a lot of customers. Their premium price advantage hasn't been as great as historically it was. And some individual plans have gone up and down. Like I mentioned, the high deductible plans have gained a lot in percentage terms, even though it's still not a huge absolute number. But there's a lot of good plans duking it out. NALC, GEHA, these plans, they've been growing.
Right. Some of the plans too you think of as agency specific plans like mail handlers benefit plan, but it's open to all employees. And so I think a lot of people shy away from those because they think they have to join a union or they have to work for that agency. But that's not true.
No, they don't.
There's very few of those agency specific plans left.
Well, actually, there's none really. there's something called the rural carrier plan. You do have to be a rural postal carrier, and I don't think it's possible, other than working for the post office, to be in that category. But for example, the plan that used to be the CIA plan, the association plan, now renamed Compass Rose, they are open to anyone in the foreign affairs community, basically
intelligence
military.
Community.
I mean, there's no real. So they're open to people. They actually list
law enforcement too.
Yeah, law enforcement.
FBI
they list about
join.
A dozen agencies.
Really?
Right on their cover.
State
and,
Department. Yeah, there's a ton of them. I didn't realize that.
The Foreign Service Plan is just about equally broad. And the SAMBA plan, which used to be special agents and was FBI only, is open to everyone without any restriction. So there's no reason for people to stay away from these plans with these seemingly strange names and so on. Quite the contrary. These are good, well-managed, nationally available, plans that all offer, superb benefits and varying degrees of premium frugality.
I think what a lot of people don't realize, too, is a lot of these plans predate FEHB. Because the Federal Employees Health Benefits Program started in 1960, and a lot of these plans have been around since the 30s and 40s. They just weren't organized into FEHB at that point.
Correct.
You all use terminology. What is a consumer-driven plan? I think I understand HMO, and I think I understand high deductible, and I think I probably understand consumer-driven, but maybe somebody else doesn't.
It's actually the same underlying concept as the high deductible plans use. The idea is that your money is at risk in the healthcare choices you make, in the services you buy. And because your money is at risk, you will be a prudent shopper. So hence consumer driven. And when you're using that savings account, it's true that you're not paying the doctor anything out of your pocket. But you're using up your savings account, and if you look ahead a little bit, you might want to think about, is there a cheaper spread, okay? And once you get into the deductible, you're paying it all. And so, again, you're certainly going to be thinking hard about, do I really need this service? So that's the basic concept, consumer-driven, and in the high deductible plans. And it turns out in the real world, they work. People are a little more frugal in their choices, and there's some increasing research evidence that those plans are able to save money compared to traditional health insurance plans because they use you as a prudent shopper. They tend to give you a lot of online help.
Do you think we're ever going to get to the point where we can go to our doctor's office and there's going to be a fee schedule posted, or you can take a little handout and say, here's what we charge for this and that and the other thing?
I think we ought to get there. It's not clear we are getting there. I mean, it's odd if you think about it. Everyone faces this problem when you decide to go out of network. If you go out of network and pay the doctor's regular price, you are in for sticker shock beyond belief. So what we recommend people do is, if you're going to go out of network, before you do it, you talk to that healthcare provider and say, what are you going to charge, and will you give me the preferred provider rate or the Medicare rate or some other discount rate so that I don't doesn't cost me an arm and a leg.
I don't think people realize they can negotiate with healthcare providers.
Absolutely. Mm-hmm. And should.
I have to say something tax-wise, and it hooks into what you all said. If you can shop and save $1,000 or $1,500, that's not $1,000 or $1,500. Multiply that by three, because you would have to earn that much, pay the taxes on it. And so it's substantial.
It's absolutely substantial.
There's nothing wrong with $1,000 or $1,500, mm-hmm. but that's after paying taxes on the higher amount. Yeah.
Absolutely.
Sorry about that. This is not a tech show.
One other factor, we were talking about why people switch or don't switch plans. One of the reasons the financial reasons are, I think, compelling, but there's an additional point. Some people have a particular physician they want to keep no matter what, and the physician drops out of plan A and becomes preferred in plan B. So that sometimes, and before you make your final switch decision from plan X to plan Y, you might want to check to see if your physician is in it. This is awfully important. It's particularly important, for example, in an area like dental, where there's no point in having a dental benefit if your provider's not in the network, okay? Because the whole point of the dental benefit is that there's a network rate. It's a substantially discounted rate.
But there's so many dentists, too, that aren't part of networks. So it is good to know that some of the dental plans will cover your expenses even outside. Because I have used one with a dentist who doesn't take health insurance, period, and I've still had substantial savings. So don't discount it just because they're not, because you can still use it.
Yep.
I have two questions that came in from readers, so I don't want to run out of time before I ask them.
I don't think we're going to run out of time, but please ask the questions.
We get through this so quick, and it's like 11 o'clock. Here's one from a woman wrote in, and she said, I have a question about whether or not a high deductible health care plan would be beneficial for my husband and me. And here's their situation. She says she's a federal employee planning to retire in 2 years. She's under FERS, and she's currently using NALC family option. National Letter Carriers is a PPO like Blue Cross, just not as large. And her husband is retired. He's 73 years old. He's does not have Medicare, even though he's 73, and his coverage is under her NALC plan. She's still employed. So here's a married couple, sounds like no dependent children. She said she does fund her FSA account to the maximum for over-the-counter stuff like nutritional supplements, her husband's blood pressure medications, and annual physicals, which she will no longer need to do since they're now covered. So, but it kind of scares me, the fact that she's saying she's funding her FSA to the maximum. That means she's putting in $5,000 and, I guess, spending it every year. So she has high expenses, even though it sounds like they're fairly healthy. So would a high-deductible plan be good for them?
Doesn't sound like it. No. You've put your finger on it, Tammy. They're very high spenders on routine costs. Mm-hmm. Chances are, but I'll tell you, it's interesting because he's obviously of Medicare age, and assuming he has Medicare Parts A and B.
He doesn't. She says he doesn't. That's my question.
Oh, he doesn't?
Why doesn't he? Yeah. Why doesn't he want to enroll? That would be my concern.
Well,
now, while she's working, I guess he can wait for Part B, but at least it should be in Part
that's
A.
That's right. Yeah, he should be in Part A. There's no cost to that. Mm-hmm. But even so, she doesn't sound like she's anywhere near 65. Mm-hmm. So I think, we rate NALC very highly for in most groups, including people who are advanced in years. And it has one of the two or three very best prescription drug benefits in the program. And it sounds like these people are prescription drug users. So I think, but, let me recommend, go online, if you want to, try using the guide. Go online and compare the plans and see how they stack up. Mm-hmm. You would probably categorize yourselves as less healthy than average. I mean, anyone using their maximum flexible
FSA
spending
account.
Is, and you'll see. I think that the high deductible plans look good, but NALC looks as good or better.
In their case.
In your case.
Right. And the second question that came in was from Bob and Karen, and they wanted to know, do you plan to discuss what plans work best with Medicare Part A? She says, I have Blue Cross Standard Option, which is getting too expensive for me. I turn 65 this month, November, and am considering changing my health plan. I have ordered Mr. Francis's book, and hopefully it will answer this question. But since you're here, we'll ask you.
It will answer your question. Let me say, we do a lot of comparisons. And one of the major circumstances we cover is people who have Part A only and not Part B, okay? And what this does, let me give you, and I'll give you a recommendation, and you'll see it when you see the online comparisons. One of the plans that's quite frugal in its premium. It's GEHA standard option, and it's a good insurance plan, but it does charge you 10% for your hospital or your hospital expenses. And, you know, well, it doesn't take a real long hospital stay for that to be a serious amount of money. But if you have Part A is primary, assuming you're retired, and you will pay zero for those hospital
expenses.
Because
GEHA will then waive your 10%.
It waives, and besides which, Medicare, it'll waive both the 10% and the Medicare Part A
deductible,
just
right.
Around $1,000.
So you end up with a statement that says Medicare paid this and GEHA paid that, and you pay zero.
And you pay zero.
For the hospital care. But
and,
outpatient,
yeah.
You still got some out-of-pockets.
And you've significantly lowered your premium cost.
Mm-hmm.
To get people an idea here, next year, self-only premium for Blue Cross standard option is $2,250 in round numbers. And GEHA standard option is $1,040.
Like half price.
So you're going to save over $1,000 in premium costs, and your hospital coverage will be 100%. GEHA is not as good on prescription drugs, so you have to make an individual appraisal, and it's not the only one we rate highly in that situation either. I think probably a good candidate for one of the high deductible or consumer driven plans as well.
I think what a lot of retirees and even employees don't understand, if they're of Medicare age, if they're 65, I think a lot of people think you're required to enroll in Medicare or else your federal plan will drop you, but that's not the case.
Absolutely not.
So you still have to evaluate whether or not Medicare is for you or it isn't.
Right. And there's many advantages to being in Medicare Part B, but it comes at a price. Namely, you have to pay two premiums instead of one. And in fact, taking the example we just used, the Medicare Part B premium is a little over $1,000. It's actually more than the GEHA standard option premium. And what's worse, by the way, a little known fact, the Medicare regular Part B premium is $96.40 a month. But that's only for people who are already retired, already having their Medicare premium paid out of their Social Security check. If you duly retire next year, you'll be paying at least $110 a month, and it may be $120 a month.
Okay, we have a caller. Linda, are you still there?
Yes, I am.
Great. Question?
Yeah, I currently have the Blue Cross Blue Shield family, and it's my husband and me and my small daughter who's six. And we were considering going to the basic, and I'm just making sure that's a good choice.
Well, I never tell people which plan to pick. You've got to make your own decision.
I know.
But I will say this. We rate basic as a better buy for almost everybody than Blue Cross Standard. Its benefits are a little different, but basically equally, if I can use that word, equally as good, if not better. For example, it doesn't have a deductible, which is significant. It doesn't give you a mail order drug benefit, but it gives you a good price on regular drugs at your pharmacy. And so there's some pluses and minuses that might matter in your case.
Okay.
The big difference is, there are two big differences. The premium is a lot lower, okay?
Yes.
We're talking about, again, roughly, well, it's about $2,000 a year less than Blue Cross. Now, the premium you pay out of your pocket, now the premium, less than standard, the premium you pay is tax preferred, so it's not really $2,000 cheaper, only $1,400 or so cheaper after taxes. But the other thing is, and extremely important, Blue Cross Basic only covers you for Blue Cross preferred providers.
Yes.
You can't go out of network and get anything paid. It's like, in that respect, it's like an HMO. Now, there's a lot of Blue Cross preferred providers.
Don't they have the largest network out there?
I'm sure they do. Well, I think several other plans are just about as big.
Comparable.
You know, but nonetheless, it can be tricky. And, you know, if the doctor you use four times a year isn't a Blue Cross preferred doctor, then I would think twice. But of course, then why are you in Blue Cross Standard either? I mean, that's a problem either way. But anyway, so that's the big constraint. The only big minus of Blue Cross Basic is that you must stay in network.
Right, and I do. And I get confused because they talk about Anthem PPO, but that's the same thing as Blue Cross.
Yes.
Yeah, Anthem is the D.C. region's Blue Cross provider.
Well, Maryland, D.C.
Mm-hmm. I'm in Virginia. Okay.
Yeah.
Well, it depends whether or not you're inside or outside the Beltway, basically. Mm-hmm. But don't worry about it.
You're covered. They'll put you in the right one based on your zip code.
Yeah. Oh, okay.
Yeah, I think you're a strong candidate for making that switch. And, I recommend for sure considering.
Okay.
By the way, suppose you have a favorite. Here's another trick. Doesn't apply just to you, to everyone. Suppose you really want to be in Plan X instead of Plan Y, but your favorite, let's say, gynecologist, you go to her once a year religiously, and it's a $500 visit or something.
Mm-hmm.
She's not – maybe she's in no plan. Okay? Use a flexible spending account. Mm-hmm. Put aside that $500. Okay? In effect, you're getting a one-third discount because of the tax preference for a flexible mm-hmm. spending account.
Okay.
You've got options. So, you know that. We just talked about that $2,000 you could save in premium, okay,
yes.
by making that plan change. You could take 500 of that if need be and put it in a flexible spending account. You know, I mean, you have a lot of things you can do, a lot of ways to save mm-hmm. money.
And I always say to people, too, the worst that can happen is if you don't like it, next open season, you can go to something else.
Absolutely.
That's the nice thing about the federal health benefit plan.
Okay.
Great.
Thanks for calling.
Thanks for calling.
Thank
yeah.
you.
Thank you. Okay. I hope more people call, but we are alive, and so that presents a problem.
In
about 18 minutes, you can call. You can call, but you won't get us. But this show is downloaded, and you can listen to it probably about 3 this afternoon until we take it off in a few years.
And it's rebroadcast during the week,
and
too.
It's rebroadcast during the week. But if you wanted to download it and listen to it at night, it's at NITPINC.com.
And this show is going to be relevant for the next 2 months because we've got open season through, what, December 11th at the ending date?
11th, 13th. I forgot to tell you the truth.
Yeah.
I should know that by heart.
It's a great show to lead in on because it's broad-based. The mm-hmm. shows after this, the representatives from the different insurance companies will be in here. And there's a rule. Talk about why your plan is good. Don't say anything bad about anybody else. And it's worked great for 5 years,
yep.
and I can't see it any different this year.
No,
by the way, next week is our five-year anniversary.
For doing the show.
Mm.
Yeah, we started in open season.
Yeah.
Yep, that's amazing. Again, it doesn't seem like 5 years.
Mm.
I was going to ask questions about health care reform and specifically about two things. One would be the dependent child coverage extended because a lot of people don't know who that really covers. And the other one is tax changes, which Bob might be able to chime in on because I understand, I don't know if this is true or rumor mill, but I understand that on your W-2s this year, they're going to show the employer cost of the health insurance. And a lot of people are thinking that means they got to pay income tax on it, and I understand that's not true.
The paranoid side of me says this is a precursor to gathering that data.
And I guess along with that tax-wise FSA, is that, are we losing steam on FSA? Are they going to change the rules on contributions to flexible spending accounts?
There's no discussion that I've seen. If they change the rules, they might skinny it down.
A couple of things have changed for next year with FSA.
Okay, let me run through them. First, you got to distinguish short, medium, and long run on this. Okay, there's some things happening in 2011, and it's the 2010 open season for plan choices in 2011.
Mm-hmm.
You know, what's going to happen 5 years down the road is what's going to happen 5 years down the road. It's not, that shouldn't affect your plan choice this year. So that's point A. Point B, the changes this year are positive for sure for federal employees. We already discussed all your prevention benefits now are totally, quote, free. You're paying a little extra in premium, but
no copay.
Okay, no mm-hmm. copay, no deductible. Your ne'er-do-well 26-year-old, up to age 26, right. adult child, is now going to be covered, provided you enroll in a family option. And it may, if you're a single mother or something, it may not be a prudent decision to go that way. After all, most 25-year-olds are or able to be employed in places that pay for, you know, that provide insurance. Interesting twist to this. This is the first time anyone's mentioned this, I will guarantee you, because I've been paying attention. Your 26-year-old, you know, at age 26, he ages out of this newly expanded benefit, but not quite, because in the FEHBP, he's now eligible for temporary continuation of coverage for 36 months, and you can cover that near-to-well child at a higher premium price for 3 more years, age 29. So, okay, those are the two big changes due to health reform. Mental health benefits have improved this year a little bit. They were already very good. That was due to another law. There was some mention of FSAs. There are no FSA changes this year except one. I believe it's in effect this year, which is over-the-counter drugs are no longer covered. Unless they're prescribed, which is a very rare occurrence, but it's possible to happen, with the exception of insulin. I mean, but basically, over-the-counter drugs are...
Well, if you want to use Claritin to fight an allergy, you have to get your doctor to write a prescription
right.
for it now.
Yeah. In fact, we had an earlier caller who mentioned that she used, someone that said they reused their FSA for over-the-counter drugs. Mm-hmm. Sorry, that's basically gone.
Mm-hmm.
And not yet, but a couple years down the road, the maximum amount you can put in an FSA account will go down. This thing's going to happen down the road, but in terms of, and it may be as much good or as bad, but right now, it's all good news.
Okay, right now, we've got Margaret from New York. Good morning, Margaret. You there?
Yes, I am.
Uh-huh. Great, great. And your question to all, Tammy or Joe?
Either of you, I'm, you know, getting ready to retire, and I wanted to find out, I have the Blue Cross Blue Shield standard option right now, listening to what you have to say about that, but what I wanted to know is what does Medicare B provide for you that Blue Cross Blue Shield does not? In other words, I know they recommend that you have both of these plans and that you pay for both of them, and I'm just wondering if you're getting your money's worth by, or if you're actually, you know, duplicating by buying into both of those plans when you retire.
Great question.
Mm-hmm. We're both chomping at the bit for that one.
Let me just say, I want to be really clear. I don't recommend, and I don't think Tammy does either, for or against the Part B purchase decision. It's a very individual decision, and it really depends a lot on what is most important to you. Let me tell you, the big plus of having one of the national plans with Part B and Part A, which everyone gets because it's free, is that you can go out of network and the plan pays 100% of your medical and hospital costs, okay? In network or out of network. So you have total flexibility at no cost to you to go. You can go to the Mayo Clinic or, you know, whatever. Some people value that hugely. Okay, mm-hmm. That
especially freedom as you get older, if your health declines.
Yeah, so if that's really important to you, that's a strong argument for paying that extra Part B premium.
Well, I always add to that too that the who wants you to have Medicare is the health plan, because once you're over 65, Medicare then becomes primary if you have Medicare. If you don't have Medicare, then Blue Cross has to keep paying the bill. So the incentive to get someone who doesn't have to enroll in Medicare to enroll is that Blue Cross and many of the other plans, as you mentioned, will waive your deductibles and your coinsurance. So not only for inpatient care, like we mentioned before with Part A, but also with outpatient care under Part B, Medicare will pay 80%, your federal plan will pay 20%, and you pay nothing. So it kind of eliminates most of your out-of-pocket expenses other than for prescriptions and dental and vision. You'll still have to pay your copays and your out-of-pockets for those. So as you get older, I think it might make sense.
Yeah, it often does. Mm-hmm. And, you know, and so you get a financial advantage. It's because you don't – let me go back. If you have Part A and your national plan that coordinates benefits, you will the Part B premium is roughly $1,200 for you next year, or $1,300. You'll get back probably half of that or more in reduced out-of-pocket payments, but you won't get all of it back. So there's sort of a financial cost and a flexibility gain. One other point. Suppose you're considering an HMO, even an HMO, or Blue Cross Basic, which does not have this special deal for people with Medicare Parts A and B. It can be a wonderful supplement in those cases. You might rely, for example, on Blue Cross Basic for ordinarily at a low premium cost for all your regular physician is, you know, preferred and so on. But suppose you need to go out of plan, you've still got Part B, and even though Blue Cross won't pay 100% in that case, Medicare will pay 80%.
This is probably another time, too, to maybe stack that up against GEHA Standard or Mail Handler's Basic, because those two plans also waive deductibles and copayments when Medicare is primary.
And Blue Cross, Mail Handler Standard, yeah.
Yeah, mm-hmm. so you may save as much in premiums as what you're going to pay for Medicare Part B, which might make it cost-effective. But you got to watch prescriptions.
We recommend, when you see our comparison, but I'm telling you now, that we find GEHA Standard is a spectacular buy for people with Medicare Parts A and B. Okay? They really work well together because not only are you covered 100%, but it fills a hole in GEHA. Okay, the hospital coinsurance I mentioned earlier. Blue Cross Basic works, even though it doesn't guarantee that 100% thing, it's a great choice. If you're eligible for them, Foreign Service or Compass Rose, okay, if you work for DOD or any of the intelligence or foreign affairs community, you're eligible for those plans. They work really well with Medicare Parts A and B. APW, we haven't mentioned that one, the high option, American Postal Workers Union. Don't have to be a postal worker. APWU is a significant saving compared to where you Blue Cross Standard. So there's a lot of letter carriers, which we have mentioned.
Mm-hmm. That's a real popular one amongst retirees. I hear a lot of them talk about letter carriers.
Now, there's something new this year.
Is Margaret still there?
Yes, I'm still listening.
Okay, good. I bet you said, gee, did I really ask that? But remember, we're moving fast, but you can listen to this about 3 this afternoon and then for a long time after that.
So if everything
isn't sinking in, and it's not sinking in with me, you can listen again.
One more option, new this year, for people who are thinking of signing up for Medicare Part B or who are already in it. There's 2 pilot projects going on, GEHA High Option and Mail Handler Standard Option. Each says we will pay all or most of your Part B premium. The details are a little different between the two plans.
Oh, they are doing that.
Yes.
I was going to ask you about that.
Yes. Okay. And they won't give you that 100% wraparound, okay? Though GEHA will pay $900 towards your Medicare Part B premium, and you get the 100% wraparound for the hospital spending, okay, because you got Medicare Part A. And Mail Handlers pays even more. They say they're going to pay your whole Part B premium. I'm not sure if that's going to be true for income-tested people. I suspect they don't really mean all.
Right.
But those 2 options, in effect, say have Medicare Part B, keep it kind of in reserve in case you want to go out of network or need it or your circumstances change or next open season you might want to make a different call and you don't want to have to rejoin and pay the penalty for Part B rejoining.
That's, you hit the nail on the head. That's what I like about that offer because – most people at 65, if you're lucky enough to be enjoying good health, you really don't need Part B yet. It's when you're 95 or 85 years old, you might be glad you have it. But if you enroll at that point, there's a penalty for late enrollment. So
absolutely,
this lets you get into it, let the insurance company pay the premium because they're benefiting from it, and then you delay your enrollment to the other side.
I think this is just – I want to – kudos to OPM for pushing this option. Kudos to these 2 plans.
So which 2 again? GEHA and
GEHA Mail Handler. High Option and Mail Handler Standard Option. There's a negative. I've got to tell you, unfortunately, these are 2 fairly high-priced plans. They're not goodbyes.
Otherwise, these aren't the low options.
Yeah. These are not the inexpensive options. Mm-hmm. Nonetheless, I think that this is the wave of the future for the FEHPP. It's very important to the program. It benefits everyone, not just the annuitants, that people who are eligible for Part B sign up for it. And paying the premium cost rather than this 100% all medical care is free wraparound thing is a way to foster prudent behavior on everybody's part, preserve flexibility for everybody, and keep your costs down. So do check out if you're in this group about to, you know, make a Medicare, or even if you already have Medicare Part B, you might want to think about these 2 options. Mail Handler Standard Medicare Pilot Project and GEHA High Medicare Pilot
Project. Is it nationwide or is it just in local areas?
Both nationwide.
Wow.
Okay, somebody, Margaret.
Anybody close to 65 should look at that.
Yeah. Also, the additional question I have is about Medicare D. If you have, say, these 2 coverages, you have Medicare B and some sort of federal plan, which you're still paying for, some of the prescriptions are paid for, of course, but not 100%, obviously. So I'm wondering if there's any, because I'm assuming if you decide later you need Medicare D because you have a lot of prescription expenses, that there's a penalty payment for that.
Okay. Let me answer quickly because, number one, if you're a federal employee or annuitant in any one of these plans, there is no penalty for late enrollment in Part D because all these plans qualify as coverage that's as good or better than Part D. So don't worry about penalty. You don't need to. You can postpone that decision. However, you're on to, this is one of my secret pieces of advice that I usually don't do. It gets too complicated down in the weeds. There are cases where it makes sense to join Part D because Part D will pay first, it's primary, and then you use your FEHPP plan's premium coverage, prescription drug coverage to wrap around. None of them offer you that 100% guarantee we talked about for prescription drugs. Mm-hmm. But in the particular case of GEHA Standard Option, which is otherwise a great buy, but only pays 50% of your name brand drug costs.
Right.
If your drug spending is high, drug user. When I counsel individual people, I often recommend, depending on their circumstance, the combination of Medicare Parts A and B and GEHA Standard and a Part D drug plan. Now, you got to keep a shoebox full of receipts, but GEHA will pay half the difference. So your Part D plan pays most of it, and then GEHA pays half the rest, and you, bingo, you wind up with great prescription drug coverage.
Mm-hmm. And to find a Medicare Part D plan, do you go to Medicare.gov?
Oh, yeah, very importantly, Medicare.gov is a great website, and there's something called Medicare Plan Compare, and you can compare either what are called Medicare Advantage plans. That's another whole option we haven't discussed, kind of down in the weeds. Or you can compare Medicare Part D drug-only plans. And what you do is you enter for the drug plans. You enter the actual drugs, the prescriptions you take, and they do almost, they've copied what Checkbook does. They rate the plans in terms of which ones are best buys for you, starting at the top.
And based on what drugs you use as well. I know you're not going to talk. We don't have a lot of time to talk about Medicare Advantage, but do you cover Medicare Advantage in the Checkbook Guide?
Oh, certainly. It's a major option. That's a way for, just very briefly, and it's complicated. The problem, most people pay two premiums, Medicare Part B and their FEHP premium. One way to pay only one premium is not to take Part B. The other way is to suspend, not drop, your FEHP enrollment and enroll in a Medicare Advantage plan. And these plans are good and getting better. They all have excellent catastrophic protection now, for example. Okay? So that's, if you're a canny shopper, that's an option.
This
well
is
worth
only
exploring.
For retirees that you can suspend your federal.
Right. Yeah, and you got to be 60.
I had an employee last week who thought she suspended her federal. I said, you can't do that if you're still working.
No.
You can cancel it, but you can't suspend it if you're working.
Well, this is... Margaret, are we done? Yeah, we're done.
I think we blew her away with too much information. Well, sorry, Margaret.
She can listen.
Good questions.
Yeah,
and,
very good.
Very incisive questions. So here's the comment. We're running not short on time, but we have a few more minutes. Walt, I know you come on this show, of course, but I also know you're on other shows on Fed News Radio, right? Don't you on Mike's?
Yeah, and the Open Season Health Fairs is where you can find him.
Well, locally, you know, we'll talk about that in a second, but nationally, we get a national
I'm on. Mike Causey and I are going to do at least three shows together this fall. Okay. The first one, I think, is a week from Wednesday.
He's always Wednesday, right?
I'm not 100% sure that, but I think that's
it's
right.
It's your turn with Mike Causey.
Yeah, so next Monday is the beginning of open season.
And I believe it's at 10 o'clock.
Yeah, on Wednesday, the following, 3 days later, on Wednesday at 10 o'clock, I'll be on the Mike Causey show. And I'll be on that same show a week later on Wednesday, and I think at least one more time before the end of open season. So if you didn't hear your question answered today, which I think is the point,
you've got a good shot
10 days from now.
And the website is Federal News Radio. Okay, so just to check, maybe Walt will be on other shows. And locally, you travel around the Beltway and I think up towards Baltimore as well doing health fair.
Yeah, I don't do that many health fairs, but there's two big events that I do, and whether you live in Maryland and D.C. or Virginia, they're Congressman Connolly in Virginia and Chris Van Hollen in Maryland, and you can cross borders and attend these things, you know. And I don't have the dates in front of me, but they will be in the newspaper.
The Virginia one's December 4th, because I have it on my calendar.
It's kind of late in open season. Congressman Connolly's actually, I have those dates. Do we have time for me? I'm going to open my briefcase. I think I may have them with me. Congressman Van Hollen has one on Monday, November 15th, 9 o'clock.
And where would it be?
Holiday Park Senior Center, which is in near Rockville. Wheaton, Rockville.
I grew up around there.
And then he has one in the evening on Thursday the 18th at the Montgomery County Executive Office Building on Monroe Street, which is, in fact, in the middle of downtown
Rockville.
That's
where my office is.
Yeah.
Or, NITP's office.
That's right.
So, by all means, if you can attend one of those two events or the Connolly event on Saturday, December 4th, so you have a morning, an evening, and a weekend choice. And what we do is we do a similar show to this.
And we have 45 seconds.
Okay. Longer and with more information and with more participants.
Mm-hmm. All righty. Tammy?
Just learn as much as you can. Take the time to look at your health plan. Don't assume what you've always had is what you should have.
Okay, Joe, great having you. First time. Hope it's not the first and only.
Thank you very much.
Okay. And thanks for y'all listening. And next week we're on with?
I'm not sure. One of the health plans.
I don't remember which one.
It's going to be
back.
It'll be on Federal News Radio.
Thanks for listening. Bye-bye.
You've been listening to For Your Benefit, presented by NITP. Please tune in next Monday at 10 a.m. for a topic solely devoted to you, the federal employee. The show can also be heard 24/7 on federalnewsradio.com. Thanks for listening.